This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
All right, the first of three big-time guests. We got Q coming in from Syracuse, Chris Mack from Louisville, and from parts unknown, Tom Luganville. Lugs, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I'm wondering when those A-listers are going to show up.
Right now. Right now it starts, big man.
What's the look on your face, Wes?
What do you mean? You're an A-lister.
Well, listen, you know I'm guaranteed to bring a quality C game every week.
Hey, let me tell you something. At the pace we went last week in the ACC versus COVID, I would take a C game because it was a rough week. And you know what? Nobody is immune from it. And, man, tag, the ACC was it last week with three games getting postponed. And we still got people talking 3 days afterwards of a game that never was played, for crying out loud.
Yeah, listen, I think so much is being made of that. But the one thing that I would ask, the one question is, were the protocols followed and were the rules followed on behalf of Clemson? If the answer to that question is yes, then what's wrong with Dabo's comments?
No, I don't think I think Dabo's comments are based on what Clemson was supposed to do. I think Clemson
absolutely
followed, I think Clemson followed all the protocols. I think Florida State did too. The problem is there is a rule in place that if the medical advisors can't agree, we don't have a game, which is, hey, fine, yep, and good. We finally had that what if issue, right? What if all of a sudden we have a disagreement? What's next? And quite frankly, I don't see that in the rule book anywhere, in the manual. And it's a shame we couldn't have some kind of middle ground to play the game either Saturday night or Sunday or Monday if necessary. And now you got both sides barking back and forth. And again, quite frankly, everybody has said their piece. And for the league's perspective, I think that just needs to settle down and, hey, let the power brokers figure it out. And I will highly suggest for both Mike Norvell and Dabo Swinney, you better worry about Virginia and Pitt respectively, because those two teams coming up this week are playing good football.
Well, they are, but I think to that point, that's why Dabo was so upset. It's another opportunity missed out to play a game to get your team ready, to get your starting quarterback back on the field. You know, those fans out there that are saying, well, it doesn't matter to Clemson. Clemson didn't need to play that game for any tiebreaker purposes or to get into the ACC championship game. That's not the point. The point is you're trying to improve as a football team. You're trying to be at your best and peak down the stretch when things aren't ideal, things aren't perfect. And that was a lost opportunity because, to your point, getting Kenny Pickett back, the way Pitt's playing right now, they're going to be a tough out. And wouldn't you, if you were a Clemson fan or you're a Clemson player, you're a Clemson coaching staff member, would have loved to have another 70, 80, 90 plays on Saturday to get ready for that? I mean, that's the whole point of all of this.
And, Tom, here's one other thing before Wes goes on your real question. Today marks 1 month since we last saw Trevor Lawrence play a football game. 1 month ago today was the last time he played. And as great as he is and as terrific as the surrounding cast is, you know, reps, rhythm. We had a soundbite with Brian Kelly talking about rhythm with your offense. That's all part of it. Man, we're now getting in late November. This is the quote-unquote championship phase that teams are trying to go through that are on that level. And you want to get into a rhythm of a game. It's, you can't just take a month off and go, oh, yeah, no problem, we'll just flip the switch and let it rip. It doesn't quite work that way.
No, it doesn't work that way. I mean, think about, what if you're Georgia Tech? You haven't even played a game in the month of November. Look at Wake Forest and Miami, the next time that the two of them will play. Those are lost opportunities to improve your football team and be at peak performance at the end of the year. And that's a shame. We could all anticipate that this was going to occur, but it doesn't change the fact that the goal at the end of the day remains the same. Play our best football, be at our healthiest, have as many reps under our belt as we can, so that at the end of the season, we're the team that, or close to the team that we want to be.
Right.
Lukes, let's turn to Friday, I should say, in Chapel Hill, Notre Dame and North Carolina. We ran a graphic earlier in the show today talking about Notre Dame's prowess to run the ball, Carolina's inefficiency to stop the run, if you will. They're not the best run-stopping group. All right, is the game played there, or is there another aspect of this game that you think has got a chance to be a big factor?
No, I think the game is absolutely played there, and it is because if you're Notre Dame, what's your number one goal? Limit North Carolina offensive possessions. So if the offensive line and the run game is humming and North Carolina cannot get off the field, that's the recipe to keep the score down. Because the bottom line is, we've seen throughout the course of this year that getting in a scoring race with North Carolina is not the wisest of ideas, okay? What you want to try and do is limit their possessions, which limits points. And I think Notre Dame not only is capable of doing that, but if they do it to the level that they have shown the last 2 to 3 weeks, they will wear out North Carolina. In fact, it's kind of interesting. I saw a comment from Mac Brown on Instagram and how he's excited to see his friend and colleague Brian Kelly this week, and how they had coached back in the Hula Bowl. And then he followed it up, and I'm paraphrasing, by saying, I tell you, it's going to be a tough matchup, but sure looking forward to seeing my pal. You know, it's almost like, what are we getting into here? Are we good enough to handle this? Oh, but by the way, hi, Brian. How you doing, man?
But it's going to help North Carolina, though, a little bit, given the fact that Notre Dame is going to be out two of their terrific offensive linemen.
Yes, but I also think one of the reasons why Notre Dame is in the position that they're in is because they've established tremendous depth in the offensive line. And I think that with the way teams are training now, the way teams are practicing, particularly during the pandemic, you're cross-training, you're utilizing more groups than ever before, your numbers are down. So guess what? You're having guys get significant reps with your ones and twos that in another type of cycle, in a normal cycle, they wouldn't get. And, you know, it's an interesting point, because a lot of coaches that I've talked to in that regard, this kind of snuck up on them. They knew that they were going to have to practice a lot of guys, but maybe didn't quite realize how advantageous that was going to be down the stretch when normally those guys wouldn't get any reps. So I think Notre Dame in that regard will be just fine. And if I'm North Carolina on defense, it's not just winning in the trenches and stopping the run. Somebody's got to figure out a way to limit the extended plays from Ian Book.
Right.
You know, Ian Book's plays with his feet outside of the pocket have really been the difference the last couple of weeks.
Luke, it sounds to me the Carolina front has been discussed, but it's really going to probably be the back seven that has a bigger impact in the game. I mean, we talk about the run game and the fits and all those type things, but you mentioned Book, and I'm also thinking about the crossing routes that Notre Dame really lives on in the throw game. Sure, they can run the ball, line up, make it look like Lindsey Nelson and Paul Hornung are there, right, and go I formation. But the idea being that the way they cross routes so much, it's probably the back seven that has as big a task as anybody else, right?
Well, if you're going to play man-to-man defense, absolutely, because those crossing mounts routes are meant to rub off the defenders and get an open guy clearing across the field. So now it comes down to, how do you mix up the coverages? How do you change it up so that Ian Book's not seeing the same thing all the time? And then it comes down to the receivers, whether it's the tight ends, of being smart and savvy in their route structure. Do they notice on the fly? Because that's the one thing. It's not just about running fast and catching the ball. You've got to identify coverage. You've got to know when it's man versus zone. You've got to know when to settle into the open void as opposed to streaking across the field. And that's recognition of coverage on the fly. I think the other thing to note, too, is not just the crossing routes, but when you get into the red area, can North Carolina match up with the tight ends in the height and the arm length that creates such a mismatch on the 50-50 ball? I think that's been a staple of Notre Dame's offense all year long.
Switching gears to Death Valley, Clemson and Pitt. This Pitt defense has been salty and good all year, even though they've had some moments like the month of October where they just couldn't score and defense was on the field all the time. But now that Kenny Pickett's back, it changes them entirely. Not only do they have the chance to score like they did against Virginia Tech, but it also rests that defense that can absolutely cause havoc. And I mentioned, Trevor Lawrence hasn't played a game in a month from today. Again, knock on wood, hopefully we have this game on Saturday. Clemson, right, offensively, you know, nobody's been able to really, quite frankly, run with the exception of Notre Dame, who did whatever they wanted in that game. But this could be an opportunity for Trevor Lawrence to have a monster game, because you know Pitt's going to try to stop the run and take ETN out. And that, of course, puts all the pressure on Trevor Lawrence and his wide receivers to go make plays.
Yeah, but I think that they've got some ways to work around that. You know, they're so versatile and multifaceted offensively that they can maybe compensate for maybe some sputters in the run game between the tackles by getting the ball out on the perimeter, whether it's bubble screens, whether it's jet sweeps, whether it's the backfield action where the quarterback and Trevor Lawrence actually becomes the designated runner. If I am Clemson offensively, we know, to your point, that when Pitt is healthy at quarterback, the defense is off the field a heck of a lot more, and so they're fresher and they're playing with confidence. But I would ensure, if I was Clemson, I would force the defense for Pittsburgh to have to account for the quarterback's legs. I think that getting that plus one in the box, that you get, it changes how you defend people. Because now, if you're concerned about being able to match up and stop the run because you're down one body because the quarterback becomes the focal point in the run game, now, guess what? You're going to have to be one-on-one. You're going to have to be on an island out on the perimeter, and that's a mismatch. If you are Clemson versus Pitt, you want that alignment. You want to see those one-on-one matchups, and Trevor Lawrence is as good as anybody as throwing into tight windows versus man coverage as anybody. And you know, lastly, you make a great point, Pac, and people talk about it, but it's different to actually see it. Think about this Pitt team without Kenny Pickett. Just envision, as we've seen the last month, last 2 months really, what happens when the quarterback can't function and how it doesn't affect your run game, it doesn't affect your passing game. Of course, that's the obvious. Look what it does to your defense. And, you know, it's easy to talk about, but then when you see it and you realize how glaring it is, I mean, it has changed the fortunes of this season for Pitt. I mean, you look back, boy, Pitt would love to have those 2 1-point losses to NC State and Boston College back, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
Pac, I don't know that Lugs has ever entertained us from the fireplace room at fabulous Luganville Estates. But
no,
it's a lovely brick fireplace.
I'm upstairs
That's the third floor. That's the third floor of my house. He's here.
Yeah. This is floor number three.
Wow. I've never been allowed. You know, when I go there, it's the basement or the main floor. I've never been allowed to go upstairs at the Packer house.
Exactly.
That's
right.
A nice
there
look.
Are
I'm
VIP.
Glad somebody gets a chance.
There are VIP status and levels that you've got to earn, Wes. This is not just handed out like candy around here.
Yeah,
you know?
we have the Western Suite, which is on the main floor, which is above me, and then Luge is on the
Does
third
that have
floor.
Plumbing?
Yes, a lot of plumbing. Yes, we got a lot of plumbing.
Thanks, Luge's.
Hey, by the way,
happy Thanksgiving, Tom. That'll be the end of this.
You.
Happy Thanksgiving. Yes. Yeah.
All right. Love y'all. See ya.
Take care, Tom Luganville. When we come back, Louisville basketball coach Chris Mack will join us. We look forward to our visit with Coach Mack. Syracuse women's coach Quentin Hillsman still to come on this Tuesday edition of Packer and Durham. We will talk to the former Sadex Bomber when we come back right after this.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, 844-ACCN is the number for the show. Thanks to Tom Luganville from Parts Unknown, but we do know where our next guest is. He is getting ready to crank up another hoop season at Louisville. Chris Mack joins us bright and early. First of all, Coach, I hope you're doing well during these crazy times. Happy Thanksgiving, and we're on the eve of a college hoop season, which will be unlike anything I think any of us have ever seen.
I appreciate the Thanksgiving thoughts, Mark. Everybody's safe. So far, so good. A lot of negative tests here at Louisville, and we're hoping for more of the same as time marches on.
Coach, you've seen some games get wiped off the board in the last day or two from some of your conference colleagues. We've had football coaches tell us they hold their breath on Fridays. What's it like for a basketball coach knowing that you're going down this kind of trepidatious path, if you will?
Yeah, uncharted waters, you know, for the basketball coaches. You know, for the longest time, Wes, you know, we had these ACC meetings among our coaches and on Zoom, and you know, for so long the talk was, are we going to have a season? So I'm excited that at least as of right now, we're set to play Evansville tomorrow, and you know, every team thus far that's coming to our bubble here in Louisville and staying at the Galt House and playing at the Yum Center over the next 10 days. So far has tested negative, and, you know, cross our fingers, and we'll be doing a lot of that all through the season.
Coach, this is how I can always tell when you have a really good program. Not necessarily a team, but a program. When you can lose every starter in a league that really matters in basketball, and the smart people that make picks go, hey, you know what, still one of the five best teams in the league. That tells me when you have a great program. So congratulations on that. And again, I have no idea how this thing's going to play out, neither do you, but it is a testament to what you've built in a short period of time.
Well, I don't know how smart those people are. We'll see you know, where the postseason statistics lie. But, you know, we do feel like we have some really good young players in our program who maybe didn't have the game experience a year ago because they were sitting behind some tremendous players. Guys like Jordan Wara, who were all ACC and now a member of the Milwaukee Bucks, Dwayne Sutton, who signed yesterday a contract with the Golden State Warriors. So, you know, big shoes to fill. But between our incoming freshman class, our freshmen that are turning into sophomores, and a couple grad transfers, we feel like we can compete in this league.
Coach, I want to talk about Carlick Jones and Charles Menlin, because they seem to be, yeah, grad transfers, but they also seem to be really good fits. They're not just guys that, oh, by the way, they were available and we wanted to get those guys in without maybe a plan. These guys look like they're perfect fits for what you need at this particular time with this particular team.
Well, as you know, Wes, Charles was hurt a few weeks ago, and so we're going to be without him and his ability here for the next month or so. You know, Carlick is a dynamic playmaker, and I think what sticks out to me about both of those guys is, most importantly, they really wanted to be here at Louisville. You know, Carlick, he'll tell you, I knew I was coming to Louisville all along. I wish he would have told me that throughout the recruiting process when I was sweating all his Zoom calls with the opponents we were recruiting against. And Charles right. was such a quick recruitment because he, you know, we had Jay Scrubb, who eventually opted to go into the NBA draft, and all of a sudden we were void another wing. And so we started to, you know, put together a list. And within 5 days, Charles Menlin was a Louisville Cardinal. And before that, I hadn't heard of Charles. Both of those guys are high character kids and unbelievable assets in terms of, you know, providing leadership on a team. And so we're really excited to have both of them in our program.
Speaking of leadership, Coach, when you lose five starters and, you know, for the folks like us sitting on the couch going, man, I can't wait to see what Louisville's going to look like. But you've seen your kids, man. You've seen these dudes now for a long time. From a leadership standpoint, who takes over? Who's the guy in the locker room that you've watched and said, hey, you know what? The guy's taking ownership of this team. Because the best teams are the ones that are led from within. So you tell me.
Absolutely, Mark. For us, you know, we were dealt a tremendous blow because one of the best leaders I think I've coached in my time both here and at Xavier is Malik Williams, who's a senior for us, who broke his foot again and had surgery a couple weeks back. But he's still been a tremendous voice both in the locker room and on the floor. He believes in our system. You know, he's a guy that's not afraid to speak his mind and share his opinion. I think he's got tremendous respect amongst his peers. Obviously, Carlick is a guy that, because of his experience, his dynamic playmaking ability, you know, he's got moxie to him. I think guys tend to gravitate and listen to him because, again, he plays for the team on the front of the jersey. And then I would say that David Johnson's been a guy that has really stepped up his vocal leadership. A year ago, he was really quiet, and I understand. He was a freshman last year, and he's playing with, you know, fifth-year seniors. I mean, we had four or five of them last year. So now David becomes a guy that, you know, for the most part, everybody on the team is his age or so, and I think his leadership and his ability to sort of run a team at times has gotten a lot better.
How important, given kind of the turbulence there, this might be prior to conference play, how important is this limited? You've got the bubble with the Wade Houston Classic there at the Yum Center over that 10-day period. Is there more of a premium on this type game now ahead of conference play, knowing – what it might be like once you get to conference play?
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to judge and value how much a game means. I mean, our guys, as you know, Wes, they haven't been in the gym and played against someone different since March. It's been
Right.
It's been odd, to say the least. And I'm not complaining. It's just sort of the hand that we've all been dealt. Generally, you get an exhibition game, maybe two of them, or Division One scrimmage that no one's supposed to know about. But, you know, our first time sort of teeing it up against somebody new is going to be tomorrow afternoon in the Yum Center. And, you know, you usually learn a lot in those two exhibition games and try to correct it. We're going to have to do it on the fly as games come quite in a hurry. But, you know, hopefully the bubble can go off without a hitch. And, you know, 10 days from now we have five games under our belt and figure out how we got to become better, especially as we head into some really tough non-conference games with Wisconsin, Kentucky, and then obviously the ACC.
Chris, speaking of the Yum Center, I always think of it as one of the great environments in college basketball. They're all going to be different this year. Have you? Again, you got 1,000 things on your plate, Yum. This is a question you're probably not going to worry about. But have you thought about, hey, what is it going to be like? You mentioned your kids haven't seen anybody since March. You're also going to walk into a building that, hey, you normally get 18,000 and you're going nuts, whatever the number is, and you're thinking, hey, we only have 18 people in here, for crying out loud. I mean, it's going to be a different stratosphere when you go play.
It is. And, you know, I certainly thought about it a lot. There's not a whole lot that we can do about it. You know, we're at 15% capacity, which is 15% more than some of our counterparts.
Right.
You know, we're going to have close to 4,000 fans. They're going to be obviously spread out. It's not going to be the same environment. You know, I was listening or watching an NFL game, you know, last night, and they were talking about how the players and the coaches really just feel like it's very strange to be playing in empty stadiums. You know, the concentration level, the ability to stay focused throughout a game is just a little bit different. And that's something that you probably can't really prepare for until you experience it. And we're going to start experiencing it here tomorrow at 4.
Hmm. Well, not only do you have a very different environment, you've been around this league long enough to know that, you know, you go to Cameron, there's nobody there. The bleachers pushed in at the Smith Center in Chapel Hill. I mean, I saw pictures yesterday of the Yum Center with the plexiglass around the benches and things like that. It's going to be just it's a stark contrast to what we're accustomed to. Do you have to talk to your players about that, or is it just, hey, guys, let's go play ball?
I think it's more of let's go play ball. I mean, there's so many things that are weird for our players besides the environment they're playing in. You know, just everyday life presents those weird challenges. You know, if you're getting something to eat, you got to stand 6 feet apart from everybody in line, and the line stretches for 200 feet. So our guys are used to the sort of weird dynamics that the pandemic have brought. I know it's going to be a little strange. I was trying to petition the ACC office to see if we could be at 100% capacity and all the other schools be at zero, but for some reason they won't go for it.
I can't believe they didn't go for that, Coach.
Were you just trying to slide that in, Mac? What was the deal? Just skip that
in?
Yeah,
I mean, I thought Swofford in his last year, you know, it's like he could really go out on a high note. And unfortunately, I think he threw that one in the trash can.
There's something I have to know, though, before we say adios to you. And my sides were hurting from laughing so hard. But when you did the video regarding Kentucky.
Yeah, I got a bad connection here, Mark.
No. This is a safe question. You'll be all right with this. Here's all I want to know. When you did the video, was that one take? I just want to know, was that one take?
Tell him, Chris.
No, it took 3.5 days. Several different, you know, iPhone storage capabilities. And but I got it done. No, honestly, it probably took about 3 or 4. As you know, you guys get probably asked to do all these, you know, promotional things, and I don't want to read what I'm trying to get across. So, fortunately, there was enough fire in my belly to get out all the thoughts that I wanted to get out.
Well, I tell you what, you made this dude laugh. I can tell you that much. I almost watched that thing 20 times and went, hey, you know what? Say whatever you want, man. That's funny. I don't care what anybody says. That was good. I just wanted to know, though, if that was one take where you said, no, I can do better than
that.
All right. That's all I wanted to know.
Lying.
All right.
Lying.
I appreciate the transparency.
I got to tell you, I can't tell you how disappointed I am to know that wasn't one take, because I thought it was. I thought you were that good, Mac.
Hey, just so you know, Wes, the first time I was a head coach and I was asked to do a commercial with Mick Cronin for the Skyline Chili Crosstown Shootout, and I tell this story all the time, and my close friends are probably sick of hearing about it. So we're at a Skyline Chili Parlor. We're all sitting at the table. And basically the commercial starts out with Mick saying, "Hi, this is Mick Cronin of the University of Cincinnati Bearcats." And then I'm supposed to say, "Hey, I'm Chris Mack of Xavier University." And Mick says his line. He looks at me, and I forgot my line. And I basically forgot my name. So for me to be able to make a video for a minute or so and only take a couple takes, I think I'm actually getting better.
Well, let me tell you what. Here's how I read that one. What Mick didn't understand was Skyline Chili's so good, I would have screwed it up all day and just ate chili all day. And then finally at the end go, "Hey, I'm full. Now I'm ready to roll. Roll the tape. I can knock this thing out in one and done here."
I appreciate your love for Skyline.
It's
same
good,
here.
Man. It's awesome. Yeah. No doubt.
Hey, be well, Coach. Always appreciate the time. Stay safe. Look forward to watching your team play this week.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Always a pleasure.
All right, Chris Mack, head basketball coach at Louisville. A lot of fun to catch up with him. His team hosts Evansville tomorrow. It's the Wade Houston Classic. It goes over the course of 10 days. We'll have some of those coverages, some of those games for you right here on ACC Network as well. Sit tight. When we come back, we'll swap to the women's game. Quentin Hillsman and Syracuse welcome back Tiana as they get their season started. We'll talk to Q when Packer and Durham continues on a Tuesday right after this.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
On a Tuesday, 844-SAY-ACCN. My thanks to Chris Mack, who just joined us, talk about the men's program at the University of Louisville. They get started tomorrow. Hoops is here. And while we're in the mood, Wes, I know you're heading to Syracuse this week. Let's go to Cuse because the women's program is led by the one and only Q. Quentin Hillsman joins us. Good morning, Coach. What's happening?
Man, not a whole lot. Trying to stay warm. Everything's good.
Well, you know, Wes is coming up there, so you better make it nice and toasty. My man down there from Georgia don't want to come up there having to layer up for a football game.
I'll take care of you, man. When you come, we're gonna turn the sun up for you, man. You'll be good.
I appreciate that. I saw the high will be in the 40s on Saturday, so I feel pretty optimistic at this point to be in late November and still have 40s, Q. I'm going to be honest with you. So,
facts.
Looking forward to being there. I know all conversations with your team start with Tiana's great return and a remarkable journey, and just her perseverance and fight to get back to play basketball is spectacular. But I also look at your roster for this year, and I told Pac, I see a lot of familiarity there. Kiara Lewis is back. Emily Inksler's back. I mean, I see some players that contributed to your team a year ago to come with Tiana now to maybe kind of put you on the comeback.
Yeah, it's no question. We had the same team we had last year, just insert Tiana, and that's what it would have been. So we're excited to have her back. Practice has been going great. Our pace and our tempo is back up. We're playing fast. Tiana's delivering the ball at the right time, so we feel really, really good about where we are right now.
How does she make a difference with all that returning firepower back? Because, I mean, she's a dynamic player. I mean, everybody knows her story, but folks that really keep up with women's basketball know she is a player. So how does that change given all the experience coming back?
She gets them easy shots. That's what she does. She's a pass-first point guard who can get her own shot. But because she's a triple threat and she can score from all three levels, it makes their games easier. And she's really, really doing a really good job of spreading the ball around. She has a lot of scores around her. She's keeping everybody happy right now, so that's a positive.
Well, you mentioned the pace. You get Kiara, who's a remarkable scorer. That's got to help her, too. That's got to help Tiana's offensive game, right?
Oh, it's no question. She makes her life easy. We can hit ahead to it. To a threat who can push it and score in transition, or she can push it herself and have Tiana trailing. And you know, you throw the ball back to Tiana with the live dribble, she's a problem to guard like that. So we have a lot of things we can do with them both on the floor.
Coach, it's kind of refreshing to hear a coach before season starts incredibly upbeat. And I know everybody's excited to play given what everybody's been through. But you've got like a little jump in the step, man. I get a sense that, hey, you know, you were picked third by the experts, and hey, that's all fine and good. You still got to go play the games. But I get a sense that you feel that this could be one of those special teams at Syracuse this year.
No crutch. It all starts with a clean shave in the morning. You know, get yourself right. Get out the door. Get your coffee, man, and get ready to roll. You don't step on any toys that your kids leave on the floor and hurt your feet. You got a chance. So that's a good start to my day every day. And so far, so good with that. But my team is great, man. They're playing hard. We're getting up and down at our pace. We're able to do everything we want to do. Right now, we're deep. We're healthy. I just want to start the game. I wish we played right now to take no more chances.
I like it.
Coach, we have talked to so many different coaches and players about the battle to get to this point. The battle being, hey, understanding what the protocol is, understanding what the discipline, the commitment, things like that. How do you approach that with a sport that basically gets ready to start now when you've kind of been going through it since, what, July, August? I mean, there's been a long runway to this for your sport, maybe even more so than football had when those guys came back in June.
Yeah, well, we had players on campus as early as June 26th. Mm. So we've been testing and on campus since June 26th. Obviously, we couldn't start until July, but we've had people on campus, and it's been good. All our credit goes to our administration, who's put the plan they have in place is unbelievable, and our players are following it. And that's what it comes down to: follow the plan, and let's execute it, and let's get through this thing. And we've gotten so far so good. We've had no positive tests on our program since we've gotten back, so we're very excited.
By the way, I want to go back to something you just said, because I brought up shaving earlier today. We were doing conference cuts with some football coaches, and Justin Fuentes, the head football coach at Virginia Tech, and he was clean shaven. And I was like, you know, he just doesn't look the same, man. You know, he's in Blacksburg, man, the beautiful part of the country, and you got to be kind of rough and gruff a little bit. Now, you've always been a style guy. You care about the clothes, the look, the brand. You just talked about the clean shave every day. I hate shaving. So give me something away from basketball that can help me get over the fact that I hate to shave every day, and you can't wait to shave every day.
It's the warm towel on the back end.
Oh.
You gotta get the warm towel and the hot towel on the back end. That's like the dessert. You gotta get the hot towel. You get the hot towel, you're gonna enjoy shaving, because the hot towel doesn't feel good when you're not clean shaved. It's the hot towel.
Coach, I don't do any hot towel. What I do is I've got one eye open at 4 a.m. and I'm trying to shave. And if I could get through the day without cutting myself, it is a small miracle. I haven't even thought about the hot towel. I got to look into that now, because that's a whole new thing for me.
There's no question. You're missing out on one of the great luxuries of being bald, man.
Hot towels, huh?
That's it.
Wes, you ever hear that one before, the hot towel? I've never heard the hot towel move. That's grade A shaving right there.
Pac, you just got $1 million piece of advice for free. That's the way I look at it.
I try to learn something new.
I want in.
Yeah, well, let me tell you, I try to learn something new every day on the show, Coach, and that is a new one. That is a new one for me. That is grade A right there.
Hey, Coach, I want to ask you about the schedule structure here. We've all talked about in basketball to play the 20 conference games, the way it's going to be moved around, the double ups in some cases, things like that. But did in these conversations that you fellow coaches had, these Zoom calls we've heard about, all those things, did it ever come to a discussion in the women's game about just potentially playing the conference and moving on from the rest of it?
It did. We talked about it at length. And I think some of the rivalries, some of those local rivalry games and some of the teams that you would normally play on a yearly basis that's within like a 100 or 200 mile radius, I think a lot of coaches felt that those games were important. And I can understand that. You know, you have some relationship with some programs and with some coaches that are attractive to play. So I got both ends of it. But at the end of the day, I think that if we're all staying safe and we all are testing and we're all following the protocols, I think we'll be okay.
Q, one of the things that we've kicked around with some of the men's coaches is how many players do you need to play? Have you gotten any information of the minimum necessary that you could have a game? Or is that just going to be, we're just going to kind of feel our way through this thing at first and kind of see where it goes?
I haven't seen that yet. And it's funny you say that, because at some point you have to have enough players to be safe and to be healthy to play a safe game. And I don't know what that number is. I don't know what the number could be, because some teams only have 10 players on their roster. So obviously, some coaches are comfortable with just 10 players on their roster and playing seven. So I don't know what that magic number is. But for me, my magic number is how many players can I get up and down the court and get around 80 possessions. That's my number.
I like it. I like it. I like it. I like it.
Okay. All right, last thing for me here, Coach. I know you got a comfort level. You got your players back. You're able to do a lot of the things you want to do. So then what is your priority in the first two or three ball games? If you get started this weekend, you got three games, I think, before conference play starts on your schedule as I see it. What do you want to accomplish before you play that first ACC game?
Obviously, you want to stay healthy. That's number one. And the second thing is just play our way. Let us play our pace. Let's get them down the court. Let's get 75 to 80 possessions in the game. That way we can shoot 30% and win.
Q, you know, before we brought you on, we were kicking around about barbecuing down here in the Carolinas. And we got Thanksgiving coming up. I would suspect that you would be a good time around Thanksgiving table. You just seem like a guy that, man, we would tell some good stories, have some good laughs. And again, given the fact that turkey's a given, you tell me, what's the perfect combination with turkey for you for Thanksgiving? What's the sides for you?
Crab legs.
Crab legs? Really?
Yes. No question.
Crab legs.
You know, everyone knows turkey, ham, stuffing. You get all that, and you throw some crab legs and some spiced shrimp on the side of that. See how much turkey you have left. A lot.
So you're going crab leg and some spicy shrimp, huh? I did not expect that answer either. I tell you what, this is why I'd like to hang with you.
Listen, I'm a Maryland dude, man. I'm from Maryland. You got to have crab legs go with anything. Crab legs go with ice cream sundaes, man. You got to have that.
No,
with some Old Bay
that.
Seasoning.
No, wait,
that's
whoa.
Easy.
Wait a minute.
No, I'm saying if you can have some crab legs, have some ice cream on the back end, that's a good day for you.
Okay. Well, yeah. Well, ice cream on the back end is always a good day for anybody. I don't care who you are, where you're from.
There you go. It's like bacon wrapped in anything, right? Bacon wrapped in whatever is good.
Now we're talking. I want to break bread with you one day, man. I think you'd be a blast to hang out with. I do.
Bring your bib for the seafood, man, so you don't get dirty. Get that white shirt dirty. Yeah,
let me tell you something. Listen, unlike you, I am not into fashion at all. So whatever gets dirty, you know what? I'm probably going to wear it 3 days in a row anyhow. Probably go back for seconds.
I respect
that. If it's good. All right? You like that?
I respect that.
Okay. Good. I like that deal. Listen, happy Thanksgiving, man. Stay safe. Hey,
Coach, good luck. We appreciate the time as always. Great to catch up.
Thank you.
All right. Quentin Hillsman's the head women's basketball coach at Syracuse. Took the Orange to the Final Four a few years ago. Really has done a remarkable, remarkable job. And that's a team that's now got its complete roster back. All the young players that went through that experience a year ago. It was a tough ride for them.
Yeah.
But with Kiara Lewis and Tiana and Emily Inksler back, they got a real chance.
You get a sense with him that he likes their club. And for a team that can score and get them down the floor, again, knock on wood, everybody can stay healthy and play a bunch of games. You may want to keep an eye on the Cuse.
That's right.
Again, you know, Louisville's going to get a bunch of love. NC State's going to get a bunch of love, and rightfully so. Really, really good clubs. But Syracuse could be part of that trifecta, if you will, for this women's basketball season.
Totally agree with you. We got women's basketball for you tomorrow right here on ACC Network. We told you with the way some of these schedules are built, you get an early start. How about noon tomorrow? Longwood and Duke. Pam Ward, LaChata Robinson will be on the call for that. And then at 2 o'clock, North Florida visits NC State. And that'll be Beth Mowens and Debbie Antonelli right here on ACC Network and streaming live on the ESPN app. All right, when we come back, the first college football playoff rankings are tonight. And Mike Jones, the Clemson linebacker, offered up a tweet we need to share with you, too. We'll do all that and more when Packer and Durham puts a wrap on the Tuesday show right after this.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham, final segment of a Tuesday show. Again, tomorrow is our Friday. It'll be our last show for the week. And wishing everybody happy travels if you're out and about for Thanksgiving and all that good stuff. Just be safe, be careful, be smart. And hopefully we get games to discuss when we get back next week. But we'll be back tomorrow and be good to go. But I know this much, West Durham. Tonight is the official unveiling of the very first college football playoff rankings. And right. I suspect my gut tells me that when we get together tomorrow morning, God willing, that the ACC will occupy 50% of the top four spots. America will still be talking about a game that did not take place, which was Clemson and Florida State dominating the airwaves, and the ACC will be dominating the top four in the college football playoff rankings. That's what I. That's what my gut tells me tomorrow.
All right.
When we get together.
Going to go with that, huh?
I am.
All right. How many in the top 25 tonight, Pac?
I think the ACC will have at least four in the top 25, two in the top two. I think Miami will certainly be right on the fringe top 10, and I think that's what we'll have. I think North Carolina can maybe sneak in the 20s and set up for the big showdown Friday when Notre Dame comes to town in Chapel Hill. So that's what I expect to see. Now, again, who knows how this is going to play out? The different starting times and dates and what we've had with COVID and cancellations. I mean, the eye test is never going to be stronger with that committee when they unveil this thing tonight. It'll be interesting. But I do think Bama, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Clemson are your four. And I think those four teams still control their destiny to get to the college football playoff.
As Pac has said, the only poll that counts debuts tonight.
That's right.
Over on ESPN. That's right. So be on the lookout for the college football playoff rankings. And we keep an eye on it tomorrow. And we'll discuss it tomorrow. Dave Doran will join us, DJ Turner, and also Virginia legend Ralph Sampson. Last time the Wahoos were picked to win the ACC, Stick was at the post for Virginia back in the early 80s under the great Terry Holland. Look forward to catching up with Ralph Sampson. We did during the summer as part of our Michael Jordan retrospective, but I really look forward to sitting down and talking to Ralph tomorrow on this program about the ACC in the early 80s as well. Look forward to that tomorrow along with DJ Turner and Coach Dave Doran of NC State. All right, Mike Jones of Clemson told a story to Grace Rayner, our friend from The Athletic, yesterday. Pack, and this is it's a tweet, and I want to share this at the end here because it has to do with Saturday's game, okay? But it shows you Mike Jones said he wanted to grab his phone to tell his parents to turn around because the game had been canceled. Remember, the story is Clemson players found out about it at breakfast, right, on Saturday morning. But the defense was already watching Pitt film over breakfast, and he was sitting right next to Brent Venables. So he did not call his parents is the bottom line. How about that? Venables wastes no time. He has no margin for you, Packer. When it comes to a ball game being canceled, we move on to the next one.
Venables and I get along. That's never going to be an issue. But I would be probably in agreement with Mike Jones Jr. that I might have been a little hesitant to call Billy and Barb and go, we're not playing. Stay away. Because when Venables gets locked and loaded, it's all attention to detail. And he is not messing around. So in some respects, that tweet and that story really doesn't surprise me at all, to be honest with you. I mean, once they got word that, hey, we're not playing, hey, it was already attention to detail behind closed doors moving forward as far as the next game. And like I said, there's been still a lot of barking going back and forth between fan bases and coaches and everything else going on. But yeah, you got to move on for both Florida State and Clemson. Bummer we didn't get that game in last weekend, but both of those teams face extreme challenges, I think, this week. Virginia's playing well. So is Pitt. And again, knock on wood, I hope and pray we get the games in this week.
Yeah. So far, so good. But it's still early, as we know, in the week. We had a little bit of a shuffle over the weekend on the schedule. If you were with us last week, you know that Duke and Wake Forest were taken off the calendar about 10:30 on Tuesday night. So if you're starting to look, and we've already had some games in the Southeastern Conference, I think one game's been tossed for this week, right, Pac? So we know that there's been some shuffling done in that league.
As a matter of fact, it got so crazy yesterday They had two games canceled, and then two of the teams that had postponed games decided, all right, we're going to go play each other. I mean, so it's kind of like what happened with California and UCLA when they had their games canceled in the Pac-12, and within 48 hours decided, hey, we can play on a Sunday. You're going to get this now. I'm just telling you, it's almost all bets are off as far as just try to get in as many games as you can by staying safe and healthy. And it's where we are. So like every hour, you got to check the ticker just to make sure you have games.
To that point, yesterday came an announcement, or I should say this morning comes an announcement, an update to the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania's state and local restrictions in the Pittsburgh area. We had Jeff Capel on yesterday talking about a minimum number of fans at Peterson Event Center. Well, that maximum has now been dropped. It was going to be about 1,200, and it's down now to 500. So the University of Pittsburgh has announced that only a limited capacity of 500 attendees for basketball home games. Total capacity numbers include players, coaches, working staff, players, coaches, families, and special guests of the university. So there you go. That'll about do that, right? 500. That's one of the lower numbers of people being allowed in. Georgia Tech had allowed 900, I think, was their number, of which 600 was going to be students. And if the students didn't accept the tickets, then they would not be replaced in their capacity. So if you're going to have some, those are two of the lower numbers we've heard so far, Pat.
Yeah, and that's going to be the norm, quite frankly. I mean, for the most part. Yeah. You know, we're still going to watch zero at Cameron Indoor, which will be bizarre and different. But, hey, so's the whole year. So let's just hope we get games.
All right.
And, again, for everybody, just be safe and smart out there.
All right, have a great Tuesday. Thanks to Drew and Josh. Great to have Jim back with us today, Lewis as well. We'll see you guys tomorrow morning for a full Wednesday show of Packer and Durham on ACC Network.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.